Well, Philly sports sucks. It used to be fun. We used to have a good time. You know, there were good days. There was a stretch there for a little bit that it looked fun. Not anymore. Nope. That's gone. Thought about this the other day. So the Phillies officially get eliminated from playoff contention. The Flyers, hey, they're back. That's good. They're also in midseason form, losing 4-2. That goalie that they overpaid for to be a backup, well, I mean, he showed you why he was a backup, but he also showed you why he was overpaid when he was overpaid. Not very good. He's not. Not at all. The only bright spot from last year showed up tonight in Joel Farabee. That's a good thing. So, yeah, it's kind of a situation in Flyers land. Granted, they didn't have their full roster, so I'm not going to rip them too much, and it's also preseason, but I did find it ironic because I didn't like the Martin Jones signing to begin with. I think Martin Jones is completely cooked. I think you could have gotten way better than Martin Jones. I think they way overpaid. I thought Fletcher's offseason was mixed. I think a lot of Flyers, Stepford Wise fans want to point to every move and say it's the greatest thing in the world. I'll tell you right now, I love the Cam Atkinson move. I think Cam Atkinson's a stud. I think Flyer fans are going to love him. Rasmus Ristolainen, I don't care what the pundits tell you, he's terrible. When you go into the Wells Fargo Center, you will smell burnt toast, and it's from Rasmus Ristolainen getting burnt by the team's better lines, either top line, top six forwards. Matching him up with Travis Sanheim is going to be a disaster, and it's going to be painful to watch. They put themselves in a situation where they overpaid for him at the deadline. Not at the deadline. They got him at the offseason, but they gave up a king's ransom to get him. And because of it, and because he's a UFA, they're going to have to overpay. It's much like the Tobias Harris situation with the Sixers. And it won't take too long for you to realize why it was an overpay. Look, yeah, he brings some physicality, but you know, I'm a big MMA fan. When you start hearing the commentators talk about how tough a guy is, it's probably not the best attribute. And in 2021, to hear how, you know, oh, it brings some nasty to him. It's not 1996. He's not a very good defenseman. So, yeah, Flyers, I think, are going to be much better this season. I don't see how they could be worse. The reality is it all hinders on Carter Hart. This team's going to go as far as the goaltender takes him, and he was pretty brutal last year. You know, the good thing is, look, if Martin Jones, if he's a serviceable backup, you know, if maybe this tonight was a fluke, at the end of the day, it's not even going to really matter. Because as the Flyers have learned for the past 20-something years, when you have two goaltenders, you don't have any. So hopefully Carter Hart, and I think he will, he'll bounce back. Future is somewhat bright. I mean, I like Cam York. He had a penalty today, but he also had a big-time assist. But still, is this team going to contend? Nah, probably not. Looking at the Eagles. Hey, we always have week one, right? Can't take that away from us. Can't. Huge week one. If only we could just sit there and replay week one. And then week two happened, and you sitting there like, okay, well, hey, they kind of shot themselves in the foot a little bit. They were in the game. They left plays on the field. It's a young team. Okay. And then week three happened against Dallas, and they just got completely embarrassed. And you have a coach that doesn't really look like he has a lot of answers, which is troubling because this is a guy that didn't call plays, and you might be able to figure out why, I guess, at this point, three games in. I don't remember having the same feeling about Doug Peterson, who also didn't call plays as a coordinator. But when he came over and in his rookie year, I didn't really question a lot of the play calling. Not that I remember, at least. This might be, you know, hindsight being 2020. But early on in Nick Sirianni era, I'm not really enamored with his play calling, but I'm also not enamored with his quarterback, that's for sure. And I'm not going to overreact to it because I didn't have high expectations for this team to begin with. So it's hard for me to get really upset when I expected this team to be bad and they're living up to that. But still, it's not a fun watch. I don't think anybody enjoyed watching that game on Monday night. I don't think anyone expected what many thought was going to be a strength of this team, being the lines, whether it be offensive or defensive lines. Both got manhandled. Fletcher Cox has been invisible, other than that touchdown, which is huge, all right? But let's be real. The play was set up by Javon Hargrave, who's earned his keep. He's earned his money. But a guy like Ryan Kerrigan hasn't shown up. You have boneheaded Derek Barnett running around, getting flagged after flag after flag, and you have to put him in there because who else do you have? With Brandon Graham going out, you don't have another option. So now you're sitting here, and you're looking at the schedule, and I got to be honest, I don't see many wins coming up. That's fine. I mean, look, I got to be honest, I want the draft pick, but it's not going to be a fun watch coming up, especially after you look at how Kellen Moore exploited the Eagles' propensity to just ignore the linebacking position. It wasn't CeeDee Lamb. It wasn't Amari Cooper that beat you. It was someone named Dalton Schultz. It was some human being named Dalton Schultz. Dalton Schultz sounds like he works at H&R Block. Instead, Dalton Schultz was out there just dismantling your linebackers and your secondary. But if that's what Dalton Schultz can do, imagine what Travis Kelce is going to do this weekend. Now, on the flip side, if you're driving around, you go, okay, play devil's advocate. They did keep George Kittle in check. But it's amazing because this is a team that has ignored linebackers. And when you look at their upcoming schedule, they play just about every elite tight end in football. So it's going to be ugly. This week, I don't see it ending any better. Yeah, okay, the Chiefs are 1-2. That might be a bad thing, actually. Because the Chiefs are 1-2, but they're 1-2 against pretty decent teams. Much better teams than the Eagles. We're talking the Browns, the Ravens, the Chargers. And they were still putting up a decent amount of points against all of those teams. So, yeah, it's not great with the Eagles. And then, obviously, you have the Sixers situation. Ben Simmons' latest saga in As the World Turns has him having the audacity to say that playing with a guy that, I will go to my graves in this, should have won MVP, was punished by the media members who hate the process. That's my conspiracy theory. But a guy who should have won MVP, playing with that guy is not conducive to his style and conducive to his success. And that is when Joel Embiid said, I had enough. I'm done. I'm pulling no punches. I'm choosing violence today. And at media day, he was asked about it, and he just went off. And we'll play the clip for you coming up. But I applaud it because this organization is bent over backwards for this man-child, for a guy that whines as much as my 2.5-year-old. This organization has gone to the nth degree to make this guy feel comfortable, to the point where they put some nasty-ass meat pies in their stadium that no one bought. Like, no one. Ask yourself, did you ever meet anybody who said, no, I actually had one of those meat pies there? No, you didn't. But they went so far as to make this guy feel comfortable that they put those nasty-ass meat pies in concession stands, knowing full well no one was going to buy them. Because it just doesn't sound appetizing. A frozen meat pie just isn't something I'm like, yeah, let me get that. You got Lorenzo's, you got Shake Shack. No. You know what? Hey, bro, get me a meat pie. That's how far this organization went to make this ass clown feel just somewhat happy. Wasn't good enough. You know, he goes out, the gym videos, okay, fine. The three-point shooting, I don't even care about three-point shooting. I got to be honest, I just wanted a mid-range game. But at the bare minimum, up your free throw percentage. That's it. Like, that's where my expectation level went. Three-point, don't really care. Mid-range game, please. Okay, you're not getting that. Okay, that's fine. Hey, I'll accept it. Because he does everything else well, I'll accept no mid-range game. Just up your free throw percentage because your ability to get to the rim is unquestioned. He doesn't do that. And, you know, so Ben Simmons puts out these quotes. This is a day, by the way, after media day. I correctly predicted this on Twitter. Most Ben Simmons move of all time. Sixers media day. They're asked about it. Ad nauseum. The players, Doc Rivers, Daryl Morey, they're all asked about Ben Simmons in one way or the other. They knew it was coming, and they handled it like pros. And they all said, we want him back. Why wouldn't they? They don't want to down his trade value. I don't know if they actually at this point want him back. But they all said, hey, we hope he comes back. We want him back. You know, we're a better team with him. And I still think that. Joel Embiid said that today. We're a better team with him. Most Ben Simmons move of all time. Just to show you, it doesn't bother him, right? What does he do? Goes on Instagram, posts a picture of himself in an empty gym in his story. to just show you, I don't know what's going on, which is complete BS. We all know Ben Simmons lives on the timeline. We all know that Ben Simmons reads every single article about him because he's baby poop soft. That's what Ben Simmons is. And I'm saying this as a guy that defended this guy for so long, and I can't do it. Because for me, and obviously for Joel Embiid, and for most of the Sixers, I assume at this point, the straw that breaks the camel's back is when you and your yes people on your payroll and that snake of an agent, Rich Paul, have the audacity to put out there that playing with a guy that should have won MVP is not, quote, conducive to your style. That is when I have had enough. And that's me. I can't imagine what that locker room feels like. Is there any doubt, by the way, he's not going to play when he comes back to Philly? And I'm not talking like if he comes back and plays for the Sixers. I'm talking when he gets traded. Is there any doubt that somehow he's going to come down with gastroenteritis? He's going to be injured. There's going to be inflammation popping up in a knee. He's going to have the flu. He's not going to play. Like, I don't know if I have ever in my life, and I say this as somebody who is baby poop soft. I'll be the first one to admit it. I have never seen an athlete this soft and this just completely oblivious to his own faults. Does Ben Simmons in that palatial compound that he has in Los Angeles, the one that he puts on Instagram all the time, does he own a mirror in that thing? Like, this is a guy that has surrounded himself with yes people. People that are just going to sit there and whisper into his ear that he's the greatest thing in the world, and he's bought it hook, line, and sinker, including that snake of an agent, Rich Paul. And everybody made him feel like it wasn't his fault. Ben, look inward, bud. Look inward. Look in a mirror. Could everybody have handled it better? Yes, the Sixers said it this past week. Probably could have handled the situation better. When the Sixers try to get on a charter jet to convince you to come to work, and you say, nah, don't even bother, I'm sure the Sixers would have brought a Primo tray. I'm sure they weren't coming empty-handed. I'm sure they were bringing an edible arrangement. I'm sure Joel had the sticks. He had the game controller. Let's fire up some Warzone. Let's fire up some FIFA. I'm sure it wasn't just, hey, guys, what's going on? Ben, you got any water or anything? Got something to drink? I'm sure it wasn't that, but no, no, no. Don't even bother, guys. Don't even bother. Don't even want to talk to you. You know, it's like, and as I say here, my mic's breaking. Why wouldn't it break? Just flopping around. Like Philadelphia sports right now, it's just limp. There it goes. See? Tyler's the only one who can see it.
You're having some problems over there.
This is a problem with this mic. And engineering comes in. They act like we're the idiots. We were literally told we manhandle the mics. What? And I'm sitting here going on a rant, and I'm having to hold up the mic. Gets fixed, it doesn't. It's like Philadelphia sports. It gets fixed, it doesn't.
You want to go through the checklist of things that have been the problem?
I'm not realizing that some people in this building are Ben Simmons. It's always your fault. It's never our fault. This mic situation is a prime example. But go ahead. Yes, give me the checklist.
You want to get to the checklist of who's to blame?
Yeah, because I got to fix my mic.
Who the culprits are in this situation? Us. Meaning us as the fans, right? We're too harsh. We're too mean. He doesn't want to come back here and play for the Philadelphia fans. The Brian Windhorst thing on, what was it, Sirius Radio or whatever it was? The Brian Windhorst thing. You know me, Pat. I'm a pretty even keel guy. I like to consider myself to be kind of measured with my takes and my approaches. I heard that. I was driving at the time when I was listening to it. I want to break my driver's side window with my fists, and I knew I wasn't going to.
Yeah.
So I avoided that. However, so it's us, right? We're the problem.
Yeah, we're the blame. It's all my fault.
The setup, the scheme is the problem. The way that they play is the problem. Joel Embiid is seemingly the problem. You get where I'm getting at here?
Yeah.
Everybody else is the problem, except 25.
They're reaching at this point for excuses. Like, Clutch Sports is reaching for an excuse. You went so far as to say, playing with Joel Embiid Joel Embiid's a damn unicorn. He does everything. He shoots from the outside. He shoots a mid-range. He can play bully ball. He can play defense. What the hell are you talking about? Like,
do you know how dominant the Sixers offense could be if Joel Embiid was able to set the high screen at the top of the elbow in the high-low game for Ben Simmons? And by the way, it could then be Tobias Harris, you know, roaming the baseline instead of Ben Simmons at the end of the game. If Ben Simmons comes off the screen and has the option to either go lob to the best center in basketball or flush on somebody who's not able to guard him because it's a switch, it's probably a center who's too slow to guard him, or it's the they didn't switch, the point guard stuck with him, and it's a point guard who's too small to guard him. Do you know how unstoppable a simple pick and roll could have been if he had any desire to get to the basket consistently?
He was scared. I said it when the season ended. I just wanted to see him. I didn't want to see the Instagram stuff, and it wasn't because I didn't want to see it because I find his timeline annoying. I didn't want to see it as in, like, dude, get away from basketball. Just get away from the game. Decompress. I felt like I was watching an athlete who was completely burnt out, who just needed a mental break from work, who needed to go to Bora Bora, and who needed to go to Wimbledon, and who needed to go to Miami and hang out with some ridiculously hot model that Joe Hoagie Mathis had to call up and complain about. Like, he needed that. I truly believed that he was just burnt out and mentally needed a break. The Ben Simmons you saw the last 3 months of the season was the worst Ben Simmons we have ever seen as a fan of the Philadelphia 76ers. It's the worst Ben Simmons that anyone's ever seen. He was lost. Not only was he lost, he legitimately looked scared of the basket, and it all culminated with that pass-up dunk. Now, I won't say that lost in the game, because that would have given him an 87-86 lead, I believe, with like 3 minutes left. I will still contest that Matisse Thybulle fouling Kevin Huerter with like a minute and a half left, and I think at a three-point line, and that made it like
you don't foul
a
three-point shooter.
Exactly. Like that, I think, lost him the game. But, you know, Joel Embiid's comments, and we'll play him coming up, but like today he said twice, we're a better team with Ben Simmons. And I say that.
It's 100% factual.
It is. I mean, you could say both things can be true. I know in this day and age that we live in, it's black and white. No, sometimes both things can be true. This guy is a baby. He's an absolute child. He's acting as such. With that said, he is an incredible talent. I compare him to a guy who's, you talk about five tool players in baseball. He's got four tools. But one tool he does not have is he doesn't have a jump shot at all. Or maybe he does and he just doesn't shoot it. Whatever. But like, he definitely has a flaw in his game. But he is an unbelievable talent. To ignore that would be foolish. It'd be naive. It wouldn't be fair.
It wouldn't be genuine either. We'd be
not
making something up.
At all. You know, I mean, there's organizations that would kill to have a Ben Simmons. Oh, well, then why aren't they trading for him? Why would you at this point? I mean, why aren't they trading for him? Because the Sixers' offer is as if he's playing at an elite level, and the offer that you're going to give is lowballing the hell out of him. Why wouldn't you? I mean, this is quintessential bargaining. The Sixers have leverage in a way because they could just fine him. But the other teams want to wait it out. Why wouldn't they? They feel like, okay, well, eventually the Sixers are just going to give in. That's why they haven't traded him at this point. The Sixers should hold a high price for Ben Simmons. Very high. Especially when you consider, I think a lot of us think that when Ben Simmons eventually gets traded, all of a sudden he becomes that player we've been begging for. The player that, by the way, you saw his rookie year summer league. When you look at the highlights of his rookie year, pisses me off to this date. It is everything we've wanted Ben Simmons to be.
Is that going to be a problem for you?
To watch
if
him
he like unlocks
flourish?
Something somewhere else?
Yeah, it'll be annoying.
Really? Because to me at this point, I'm so ready for like the out of sight, out of mind portion of this that as long as it doesn't directly impact the Sixers, meaning like if they send him to an Eastern Conference team and they knock them out of the playoffs, as long as it doesn't directly impact the Sixers at this point, I am so ready for the, you know, like the out of sight, out of mind portion
for me,
of this whole thing.
It's the here we go again, the typical Philadelphia thing. We can't have nice things. Why can't good things happen to us? It's like you have this guy that is appreciated, that the fan base got behind. Yes, okay. There was a sect of the fan base that was not behind him because they were expecting baby Magic Johnson right out the gate. And he gave you a stretch, but he never improved. That's my one big problem with Ben Simmons. The Ben Simmons that you saw his rookie year is the same Ben Simmons that we have now. You might be able to argue that the Ben Simmons we have now is worse. But he never improved whatsoever. Now, for a number one pick, he still is a very elite athlete, plays at a very high level. Okay, should have won Defensive Player of the Year. I'll stump for that all day. But clearly, he does not have that dog in him. He doesn't have that mentality that you need. I sound like Nick Sirianni right now. You know, and I find it ironic because all of a sudden, everybody that just crapped all over Jimmy Butler when Jimmy Butler was, you know, traded to Miami. Everybody who crapped all over Jimmy Butler, by the way, the same people that loved Jimmy Butler when he was here, if you notice. As soon as he was traded, it's like, oh, nobody works harder than Jimmy Butler. Oh, look at him. Yeah. All of a sudden, they're putting their tail between their legs saying, yeah, maybe Jimmy was right. And maybe that has to do with the fact that you're 7'2", should have been MVP today, said as much in the interview. So let me go to Jay first in North Philly, and then we'll get to Joel Embiid's comments. But Jay, wants to talk Ben Simmons. Jay, you're on the Fanatic.
Hey, what's going on, man? I just wanted to make a quick comment, and I wanted y'all to just really think about this. Before we drafted this guy, he could have been the college player of the year.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't because of the GPA. He didn't try hard in the classroom.
No, and you can see that in his Showtime documentary, One and Done, which is very well done. It's very good. But he didn't care.
That was the only comment I wanted to make. He's been like this.
No, and Jay, that's a good point, man. I appreciate the phone call. Jay's right, you know, and maybe, like, for me, I didn't look at that at the time as a red flag, that he didn't really try in college, whether it be the classroom or the basketball court. I think he tried to the extent on the basketball court of, I think he's a very selfish player in a way. And I think this is proving it, by the way. I think the refusal to look inward and find flaws within yourself, I think, is showing itself that he's a selfish player. But like in terms of college, he didn't really make an effort. But once again, if you watch that Showtime documentary series, he had no interest in going to college whatsoever. College was a means to an end to get to the NBA. And as soon as he was done his first semester, you know, because at that point, you need to get through your first semester to be eligible.
All you got
to
do is be academically eligible.
After that, you stop going to class. And Ben Simmons, by the way, is not the only person to do that. I think a lot of athletes who know they're going to be one and dones, check out, stop going to class.
Well, and, you know, it was, like you said, it was a means to an end. If he had played 5 years later, if he was 18 now, he's not going to college. He's going to the G League. Yep. He's playing for the Ignite. He might even go overseas somewhere. Yep. I mean, that was an option then, but like the G League thing is a realistic option now. He still would have been the number one overall pick and would have gotten paid $500,000 to do it, you know, for the season. The whole college thing where he didn't try in school, he had the 1A GPA, it holds no water for me. Because like you just said, as soon as you become fall academically eligible for the spring and you can play the entirety of the spring and go to the tournament if your team's good enough, I wouldn't go to class either. I don't blame him.
Look, I mean, I can't rip the guy. I barely go to class when I was in college. And I
went to a lot of classes and it put me and you in the same spot.
I picked a very, very easy major. And there were times where I would nap in the radio station in college. And I would have a class that was all of two floors above me. All I had to do was get up, walk up a flight of steps, walk up another flight of steps, and I was there.
That's maximum effort.
And
by
really
you.
All I had to do was sit there. We're not asking for participation. Just sit there. And there were plenty of times where my alarm would go off from my nap, and I would say, yeah, not doing it.
I got hit with the... not coincidentally that my sophomore year was my worst year in college by far. I got hit with I moved into an apartment with my buddies for the first time.
I'll do it.
And it went, do I really want to walk to class today? No. I'm going to go back to bed.
No.
I'm going to play 2K.
And I still stand by C's get degrees. Because there are people at the station that were straight A students, and there were people like me. And as you said, we both ended up at the same place. You know? There's a guy that finishes dead last in Harvard Med School every year. You know what they call him?
Doctor.
Doctor. So, yeah, I think a lot of athletes know, okay, my future is set. They're not going to bio 101, econ 101 at 8 a.m. And I don't blame them for it. They live in a different world than me and you. Me and you had to at least make an effort to pass and get a degree because we needed a future. Ben Simmons' future was already set, but let's listen to Joel Embiid's comments today because he absolutely chose violence and he unloaded the clip. And here's what he had to say when he was asked about Ben Simmons' most recent comments that playing with Joel Embiid isn't really conducive to his style anymore, and the career, the tenure is what's the word he? All of a sudden, I can't talk. It has run its course. There we go. Okay. We're going to win on Marconi for this one. Run its course. Go ahead. Play Joel Embiid.
Like I said, it is disappointing, but I feel like, you know, over the years, the way our team has been built around, like, you look at last year, you got the whole starting lineup shot. I was the worst three-point shooter of the starting lineup, and I shot 38% for three. We've always had shooters, and I feel like I can really play with anybody, and I can make, you know, anybody, you know, be better on the court. But I don't necessarily need shooters, but I feel like over the years, you know, you look at, you know, when we saw out, it's because we needed a stretch five, just to make sure that, you know, that was formed. And I, you know, most of my career, I've had to kind of, you know, step out to the 3-point line quite a bit, which I don't mind. You know, I like to be, you know, a basketball player. I like to do everything on the basketball court, but I feel like our teams have been viewed, whether it's the shooting needed, the stretch five and all that stuff. I feel like he's always had it here, and we still have it. You got Seth, you know, like I said, one of the best three-point shooters ever, Danny Green, Tobias, he's a 40% three-point shooter, Furkan coming off the bench. By time, Shake, I think he can be a better shooter, but, you know, he can get hot. We just added George. So I feel like, you know, our teams have always been built around these needs. So it was kind of surprising to see, you know, what we say that even going back to, the reason we signed out is, you know, we got rid of Jimmy, which I still think it was a mistake, just to make sure that, you know, he needed the ball in his hands, and, you know, that's a decision they made. Yeah, like I said, it is surprising. But I'm really focused on the guys that are here. The situation is weird, disappointing, borderline kind of disrespectful to all the guys that are out here.
Okay. A lot to digest there, Tyler. A lot to digest.
Quite a bit.
So, the fact that he went and admitted that the organization, which isn't really breaking news because it's been talked about quite a bit, but the organization picked Ben Simmons and, well, he didn't say is they picked Ben Simmons and Brett Brown over Jimmy Butler. That's one thing. You've admitted that. We kind of knew that already, but the fact you're coming out, the fact that the organizational cornerstone is admitting it is confirmation to it. You really don't expect that a lot of times. But the fact that he goes on to say, I think that was a mistake. He doesn't say, I think it was a mistake that we chose Jimmy over Ben. It's more of, we got rid of Jimmy. I think that was a mistake, by the way. You can put two and two together. Why did they get rid of Jimmy? Because Jimmy actually challenged Ben. And this is what drove me nuts with the anti-Jimmy Butler crowd in this town, the town that turned on him so quickly. And I remember making this point. Jimmy and Ben didn't get along, and a lot of people knew that. And it wasn't like didn't get along might not be the right word, but they rubbed each other the wrong way. Jimmy Butler just got done with playing with two guys in Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins. And Karl Anthony Towns, he called soft over and over and over again. And Andrew Wiggins was a lot like Ben Simmons. He was the golden boy. Winless for Wiggins. Number one overall pick. And he just didn't really have that dog in him either. He didn't really care to be great. That's one of the problems I have with Ben Simmons. And I said today on the John Kincaid show, I don't get the feeling that Ben Simmons truly cares about winning a championship. I think he cares about building a legacy for himself and himself alone. I think Ben Simmons would be perfectly content with getting traded to Orlando, never winning a championship, never really coming close, but just being that guy, that all-time great, that guy who ends up getting into Springfield, Massachusetts, that guy that is in the All-Star game. You know, I'm trying to think of an example. I mean, I guess to a certain extent, maybe. And I think this guy had some dog in him for sure, but I think like all-time great to stay on a bad team. And Tracy McGrady, the Rockets, those were bad teams. Like bad teams, and what I mean by it is like they were never going to beat the Lakers and win a championship with Yao. I'm really stretching here. Probably think of some better examples than that, but you get my point. Just a guy that wants to go to some market that doesn't really care as much as Philadelphia does, whether it be Phoenix or Los Angeles, like the Clippers, or Orlando, even Brooklyn. Like, Brooklyn doesn't have any fans. Come on, get real. I think he would love to go to a market like that and just wither away. Play his game. They quote, build the team around him. Because I think he's just selfish. I don't think he cares about other people's success. I think he cares about himself.
Well, and that was why something that Devon and I were talking about last night was he asked me if the Sixers start hot and, you know, they're like 12-5 through 17 games, would he reconsider this standoff with the Sixers? And I said, no, I really don't think so. I think at this point he is so set in his decision.
Yeah.
He is so against playing in the Sixers uniform in front of the Sixers fans for the Sixers organization ever again, then no, I don't believe that to be the case. And that it's so unbelievably frustrating. And it's so strange to me that at this point, it's become very evident that winning means nothing to him.
I don't get it, man. Like I said this before, like I'm mentally salt. Like I beat myself up over my athletic struggles, if you will.
I understand.
I always say God cursed me because he gave me the mindset that hates to lose and the ability to do nothing about it whatsoever. Like I hate losing. I hate being the weak link, which is pretty often on my teams. So I don't get the mindset of not caring about winning. And Bob Cooney's brought it up. You can hear Bob in a couple hours. The AAU mindset nowadays of turn the page, we have another one. And in a way, that's good. You know, Ted Lasso, be a goldfish. In a way, it's good to not dwell on the losses and not care. But in another way, it's not. Because it doesn't make winning. You know, I think in a way, it's okay, we're turning the page. Flip side of it, it doesn't bother you, and thus you don't really care about winning, because how can you celebrate the win? How can you celebrate the accomplishment? Because you're constantly thinking about down the road, the next game, the next season, the next blah, blah, blah. And that's what the AAU model has really built in these kids. And Bob's talked about it before, where when the Sixers had Evan Turner and those guys, you know, and they were trying to build that young squad up, they lost a close game, and couple of guys came in the locker room and were fine with it. All right, when's the next one? And Doug Collins, who was the coach at the time, flipped out at him because it was a close game. They shouldn't have lost it.
Well, there's a substantial difference between, you know, like the quarterback mindset where you have to have a quick turnaround.
Yes.
You throw a pick, you fumble the football.
Yep.
You got to get back out there. Your offense has to return.
Yeah.
There's a much different mindset between we'll get the next one and not caring about this one.
Yeah, you said it way better than I could. And that's exactly right. And it just doesn't seem like I don't understand the mindset of I don't care about winning. Hey, winning's cool, but I don't care about winning. Like I've yelled at teammates, like, why do we drive here? Did anyone drive here to lose? No. Okay. Like these guys get paid. And I get it, it's a job to them, but I just don't understand. And Ben Simmons seems to have that mindset that he doesn't really care about winning.
And you're talking about, you know, your hockey leagues, right? And you're playing in adult
the lowest level you can get.
I'm talking it's about bad. The same thing in the baseball leagues I used to play in.
Tripping over the blue line.
Local leagues, right? Rough. And you have that I don't want to lose mindset. And a lot of times it's not even I am mad we it's not it gets to that mindset where it's like I hate losing more than I like winning.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like that drive to hate losing is very, very real. We're talking about you know what leagues.
Yeah, I'm not in
Philadelphia.
I'm not. To some people out there, I might sound like the guy who calls up and says, I know what I'm talking about because I played JV football. I'm not.
Not what we're trying to say.
Not at all. So please don't misconstrue what we're trying to say. It's the I personally cannot fathom anybody out there who does not care about winning. Like a pro athlete who has played their whole lives to get to that point, that pinnacle, they don't care. I don't get that. And for me, it's painfully obvious at this point, that's Ben Simmons. He cares more about his ego, which, you know, he's extremely soft. You know, he's mentally fragile at times. He cares more about all of that than about getting on the court winning. And a prime example is what you talked about with Devon. No, he's not going to give in. He's dug in. Because at this point, him showing up to camp, even though it is in his best interest if he really does want to get traded because he has to rebuild his trade value, him showing up at camp is an L, in his opinion. It's a loss. It's a chink in the armor. It's a negative. He's given in. And it's much like shooting. It's much like Brett Brown coming out and saying, oh, you know, we want three-point shots. Well, he's not going to do it. Why won't he do it? Well, I think deep down, I think he knows it's probably best for the team. He won't do it because he might look bad. Oh my God, God forbid. He might look. You know who looks really bad with a jump shot? Giannis. Giannis doesn't have a great jump shot, but he's a great team player. And he realizes this jump shot is going to make my all-around game better. Ben Simmons is too focused on the Twitter video going viral. And that is a problem. Look, we'll get into another problem. It's the Phillies coming up. It's Pat Egan, Tyler Zoli with you until midnight, 97.5 The Fanatic.
Give me that phone to Vaughn Gibbons on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Tyler, what sweatshirt am I wearing? Can you see it?
Yeah, I think it's a Philly shirt.
Okay, what hat am I wearing?
Also a Phillies hat.
What pretty much do I wear every day?
Phillies and Temple.
Yeah, some form.
Semblance of those two teams.
Yeah, we did like a thing on the Jock and Cade show where I wrote down all the jerseys I have for the Phillies. I'm a jersey man.
You got some minor leagues.
Yeah, I got some throwbacks.
You got some guys that are like, why?
This guy here is dead.
I brought that mention up the other day. I still laugh every time I hear that scene.
Yeah, it's an all-timer. I like to consider myself a pretty big Phillies fan.
Yeah, you're a Scherzer guy.
Season tickets. Like to go to the games. Where do I go with this? How do I not curse is the better question. I'm done with Joe Girardi. Done. If you were unaware, if you're driving around, the Phillies have been officially eliminated from the playoffs. Lost the Braves today 5-3. And this is an organization that is now in their either 10th or 11th
10th.
Year.
Yep.
10th. Of,
it's been a decade.
Yeah, 2011. Of missing the playoffs. They had the easiest schedule down the stretch. Facing teams like the Diamondbacks, the Orioles, the Pirates, the Marlins, the Mets, facing all of these bad teams, winnable series. Series that even though you take 2 or 3, you should have swept. You know, like when you lose a game to the Orioles, you just wring your hands and curse at the clouds, if you will. So they lost tonight. They lost the Braves in Atlanta, a team that is banged up. So the excuses of, well, Phillies didn't have Hoskins. Well, this guy was a little injured. Alec Bohm didn't exactly light the world on fire. He took a giant step back, and clearly something was wrong with JT Realmuto. Okay. The Braves literally lost their entire outfield, and they went out and they addressed it at the deadline. And those guys hurt you tonight. Jorge Soler goes deep to start it off. So, you know, they lose to Ronald Acuna. The excuses. The Braves have way more excuses than the Phillies ever do. In this situation, if you want to go tit for tat, I'll take the Braves excuses over the Phillies excuses all day. But the Braves and the Phillies, and this is the difference, one is a winning organization and the other is a joke. The one is the man, the other one wants to beat the man badly, and it's laughable. It's big brother, little brother, and that's just the way it is. But last year you had a situation where you had the worst bullpen in the history of the game, like historically bad. So you go out and you address it. And I think the bullpen was much better this season. Flip side, how could it be worse? But they were much better. They went out, they addressed it. They got Alvarado, they got Coonrod, they got Archie Bradley, they got some other pieces. The problem really was the fact that it wasn't so much blowing the game, it was, all of a sudden the seventh inning guy would have a bad night, or the eighth inning guy, and then the fact that they didn't have a closer. And they have to make the trade for Kyle Gibson, who wasn't sharp tonight, and Ian Kennedy. And Kennedy wasn't great in his time here. But the Phillies ended up with like 32 blown saves. And that's where you circle and you go, okay, that's winnable. My big problem, though, with this Phillies team wasn't that they necessarily didn't make the playoffs, because I didn't think they were going to win anything if they made the playoffs. My problem with this team is they're led by a guy, and I know this because my favorite college team has this problem too. They're led by a guy who looks like he doesn't have a frigging clue what's going on. And I've said this before on the morning show. It just appears to me that Joe Girardi's time away from baseball when he was on a broadcast might not have been his choice. It seems to me that maybe major league teams looked at Joe Girardi and said, Emperor might not have clothes, so we're going to go in a different direction. Because I remember when Joe Girardi was hired, and Tyler, me and you have a mutual friend, he covers the team, and I texted him when he was at the press conference, and I said, hey, just, I'm curious. Like, ask Joe Girardi why he chose Philly. You know, it's like the proverbial question when anybody chooses this city. It's like, why would you do that? Why'd you choose us?
Are you sure?
Yeah, why'd you choose us? And to the writer's credit, he asked. Joe Girardi didn't really answer the question, but the writer, and I found this very interesting, he texted me and he gave me his answer, but he said, I just get the feeling that there were no other offers. And it was like, wow. I mean, this guy did win a World Series. He did take a bad Marlins team and piggyback that to a job with the Yankees, and he had that job for a while. That's okay. That's eye-opening, but let's see. He instilled absolutely zero confidence in me as a fan this season. None. The amount of times where he overmanaged, where he would take a guy out of a game too early, knowing full well that he was going to go to a bullpen game the next night. The fact that it took too long to get Ranger Suarez in the rotation. Now, you might sit there and go, well, Ranger Suarez needs to prove himself, blah, blah, blah. Ranger Suarez was a starting pitcher his entire career in the minors. And this is one of my biggest problems with the franchise. He gets brought up, and the Phillies have no idea how to handle him. All of a sudden, the Phillies act like me trying to lose my virginity. Like, I don't know what to do. What do we do with this guy? Long man. Put him in a long man. No, seventh inning. Mop-up duty. To his credit, he just continued to get better. But the only reason that Ranger Suarez is even in the rotation is because the Phillies got to a point where they literally had nobody else. And even then they tried to make it a bullpen game. But Ranger Suarez got the job done, kept building up his arm strength, and he ended up becoming arguably your best pitcher this year other than Zach Wheeler.
He got made a starter because Vince Velasquez stunk.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Moore stunk.
Yeah.
Chase Anderson stunk. Am I missing anybody? Oh, Spencer Howard stunk. And it was like a last-ditch effort to try to salvage something. And like you said, to his credit, he continued to get better. And I thought he was I thought he did a really good job out of the bullpen in the closer role. I thought he was really good there. I think whatever role that you're going to use for him, he'll thrive in. And the reason that I say that is he's got good stuff. He's got a lively fastball. Would I say that his breaking balls are amazing? No, but they're good. The thing about Ranger Suarez that I really value is Ranger Suarez knows how to pitch. Ranger Suarez knows how to work counts. Ranger Suarez knows how to attack the strike zone. Ranger Suarez knows how to go change location, eye level, and speeds effectively and consistently. And that's something to me that is very difficult to teach. And he's gotten that down. So
it literally cost Vince Velasquez his career.
Correct.
Vince Velasquez was a thrower. He was never a pitcher. He never developed into a pitcher. And you're right, Ranger Suarez has that. You know, the Matt Moore, like, I'll tell you, all of these guys, all of these Japanese pitchers that come over, and I'm talking like Miles Mikolas, Matt Moore, Josh Lindblom, like, they should just send an edible arrangement to Colby Lewis, who was the first American to flame out in Major League Baseball, go over to Japan, reinvent himself, come back, and actually succeed. Because these teams think they're finding diamonds in the rough. Oh my God, you know, he really untapped something over Japan. Playing against the Chiba Lota Marines. Like, no. We can stop this right now. So you're right, Chase Anderson, they all sucked. And it got to a point where he needed somebody, right? But this is a prime example. Another guy you brought up, Spencer Howard. Do I think Spencer Howard is 7 ERA bad? No, I don't. Because at some point, it's like Ben Simmons. You can't keep blaming everybody else. It's not every prospect's fault that they don't develop. Maybe it's the way you do things. Maybe it's the fact that Scott Kingery, who never played center field, gets brought up. And instead of putting him in his natural position, which, by the way, he's never played, they've never given him a good look at second base. Instead of putting him at second base, or even, I don't know, its brother, shortstop, you don't do that. No, you put him in center field. He had never played center field before. And opening day, he's out there in center field because he gave him a contract. Like, they have no idea what to do. The fact that Rhys Hoskins had the year he had, the fact that he is still a serviceable major, better than serviceable. He is. He's better than serviceable. A very good hitting first baseman in Major League Baseball. The fact that he is that today, after what that organization did to him, putting him in left field for a season because they stupidly decided to sign Carlos Santana for absolutely no reason, and then trying to change his swing, the fact that he persevered through all that, I'm making it sound like he just stormed the beach of Normandy, but you get my point. Like, at some point, it's the organization and their inability to just let guys go.
Well, it's been the organization for a while, and that's why I'm so back and forth, and I'm almost getting to the point of, like, hypocrisy with Joe Girardi, because on one hand, I feel the same way as you do, and I was even to the point right at the All-Star break. I've been saying this for a while. Right at the All-Star break, if they didn't have that stretch where they played well against the Cubs and played well against the Red Sox, yep, I would have fired Girardi at the All-Star break. He was that bad. And at the same side, this front office and this organization has messed this team up so bad time and time again that it leaves him with limited options. When he has those limited options, he needs to make the best decision with what he's got. And more times than not, he has not this season. So it's like this weird balance.
Yeah, it's
scale.
A yin and yang. My problem, and the reason I'd fire Girardi, is my problem with Girardi, I can accept everything you just laid out. You know, that the organization really put him in a bind at times. There were so many times where his managerial decision was the thing that pissed me off.
Oh,
and it had nothing to do with the organization's roster. Like, putting Didi Gregorius in key September games, putting him hitting against a lefty when he can't hit lefties. I mean, he's having the worst season of his career, and you just stick with him because he's your boy. As I said, you're pulling starters who are rolling early. Like, one of Ranger Suarez's early starts, he had like 33 pitches and they pulled him. Well, Joe Girardi has no problem keeping a reliever in there until his arm falls off with 45 pitches. But Ranger Suarez is in there at 33 pitches. And, oh, my God. No. No, we can't have this. That is my big problem with Joe Girardi. His managerial style was bad. And that was a man who looked like he did not have a clue what was going on. A manager can probably win you 5-10 games just on decision-making alone. I don't think he won you many. Definitely not five.
No, but I think he lost you more than he won you.
That I was going to say it, but you took, yeah, you said it for me. I don't want to get ripped by that one guy on Twitter. Told me he wasn't going to listen, but he's probably listening now. He's probably going to tweet at me and say, like, that's just stupid. All right, let's get to the leftovers.
All right, so this is your first time to be a part of the leftovers.
Yeah, I'm pumped,
it?
Man.
All
I'm
right,
pumped.
Welcome. So, how this
not,
works.
I'm pumped not to focus on pull up with sports a second.
How this works, Devon and I get the leftovers, you know, the last couple minutes of the show. We get to some of the stories that we didn't get a chance to talk about throughout the show. So, why don't we start in the NBA? By the way, you're going to blindly react to these you have not seen or heard, or we've not conversed about any of these stories. But let's start in the NBA as players who are forced to miss games due to the executive orders that are set down by governing vaccination requirements in both New York and San Francisco will officially not be paid for any of the games that they miss. Both cities passed executive orders in recent weeks that could affect the Brooklyn Nets and the Golden State Warriors. Now, in New York, which would apply to the Barclays Center, it does require at least one COVID-19 shot to enter San Francisco's Chase Center. A person must be fully vaccinated. Now, you're probably saying, Tyler, well, you said New York. Why does that not include the New York Knicks? That's because the New York Knicks, who said the entire organization, including every player, is fully vaccinated and will be in compliance with New York City laws. Now, this executive order only applies to players who play in those markets. Out-of-market players will be exempt from these restrictions.
Not a huge fan of it. And I consider myself a lib soy boy. All right. I'm a Moderna man. I got my shot. At this point, I don't know how you... these organizations, and I was listening to a podcast today about it, but it was hockey, though, where these organizations are trying to instill at this point some of these players, because hockey's having the same problem, but it's more of Canada. But, man, like, you're going to cost the team. Like, you're going to really hurt the team in this situation for the guys. But it's if you don't make it for out-of-market, then that's the problem I have. I feel like it's hypocritical, because out-of-market teams like, this guy can come in without a shot, but I can't because I play, like... What are we doing? So that's the problem I have with it. I mean, I think an ideal scenario, I want everyone to get vaccinated and we all get through this thing together. I realize, though, that there are going to be people that don't do that. There are. And if you're going to do it for the people that play in New York or in San Francisco, then it should be for opposing players as well. And that's the thing with the NHL. The NHL, like, if you play for the Flyers and you're not, and everybody on the Flyers is vaccinated, you can't go to Canada. And that's the way I think it should be.
All right, let's go to the NFL. We're going to spend the rest of our time in the NFL. The NFL has officially, well, not the NFL, but the 2022 Super Bowl halftime show has officially been announced. Here is the performers that will be performing at the Super Bowl on February 13th at SoFi Stadium.
Nash Young.
How about this one? Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg, Eminem, Mary J. Blige, and Kendrick Lamar will be the performers on stage for the 2022 Super Bowl halftime show. It'll be the first time that LA has had the Super Bowl since 1993. Listen to these numbers. The five artists that I just mentioned have combined for 44 Grammys. 44 Grammys won in their careers.
Don't care. Couldn't care less.
Not a halftime show guy?
I like those artists, too. I do, but I don't watch the Super Bowl for the halftime artists. In fact, I mean, me and you were in these exact same like seats.
I don't even remember who did it,
it's just
when
Timberlake.
The Eagles played.
But that's my point, is I very rarely come away from a halftime show and go, oh my God, that was great. I don't care. Whatever. You know? But I think it's good because it's different. Like, I joked about Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, but for a while there, they were going with, like, the old-time, let's get Bruce Springsteen. Here's Bon Jovi. Oh, hey, here's Kid. Like, all right, let's spice it up a bit. I think it's going to be great. I think people are going to like it. I personally don't care.
You a video game guy?
Yeah.
Play a lot of Madden anymore?
Not so much anymore. Used to.
It's not very good. But I will tell you this. Somebody officially has been added to the 99 Madden Club. After hitting a 66-yard field goal in NFL record, Justin Tucker has officially been made a 99 for a limited time after hitting that field goal in the Madden 22 game. He becomes the fifth kicker to have a 99 overall rating, joining Adam Vinatieri, Mike Vanderjack, David Akers, and Morton Anderson.
Vanderjack!
Yes. How about this, though?
Drunk idiot kicker was a 99?
99 at one point. Madden was a lot more generous back then.
Well, back then it was... There wasn't a weekly update.
Right. Your stats were what your stats were for the season. The only way you could progress was to play, like, Dynasty mode. But how about this? This is even more surprising than Tucker being named a 99. Do you know what his rating was before this upgrade?
96?
87.
How?
I have no idea. He's the best kicker in NFL history.
Yeah.
Not just subjectively, but objectively. He's made 17 game-winning kicks, including all 16 of his field goals with under 1 minute remaining in regulation, and has kicked 91% of his field goals successfully in his NFL career.
Yeah, the fact that he was undrafted is amazing to me.
He's the best kicker in NFL history.
Hell of a singer, too. He sings opera.
Opera singer,
opera,
yes.
Yeah. Good for him, man. I mean, that's... Kickers deserve respect. I thought it would be Jake Elliott, but, you know, Justin Tucker deserves it, too. Jake's coming behind him. That's not going to happen. He deserves it. I can't believe 87. Absurd.
All right, we got a couple more stories, but we're running out of time. So, Pat, welcome back, or welcome to the Leftovers, and those are our Leftovers for Thursday night.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I guess we'll save the other ones for Devon?
Yeah, just one more.
That's fine. I mean, whatever. I get it. I appreciate Devon
We got time to hit.
I appreciate Devon letting me fill in for him tonight and rant. I appreciate you listening to it.
I don't get to see you very often.
Yeah. We text. I say, let's hang out. And you're like, lose this number. Happens all the time. It's awkward. So, look, I'll be on in about 6 hours with the morning show. Tyler, thank you so much, and talk to you in a couple hours.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911, and we'll send the link straight to your phone.